can read my thoughts, boy.
Meow, 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 meow.
Coaches, welcome back to the Talking Split podcast. I am Rob Calder, joined by Nathan Cooper-Briar, and welcome, Coops.
Hey, guys.
Zoe Carr, welcome, Zoe.
Thank you for having me.
You come back, we've got to go something a little bit different, but it does lead into our topic somewhere. We do normally try and get the drops in the intro to somewhat relate to where we're going, and it does somewhat relate, but, you know, it's hard to go past Homer and the mind reading, obviously. As always, anytime there's a podcast, there will be drills going up, and you can follow along on the Talking Split socials on X and Instagram. So drills will come back next Monday. Podcast will be dropping this Friday. Any help you can give in following along with the podcast, you can turn on the auto downloads on the podcast platform that you listen to, obviously Apple and Spotify. That would be fantastic. If there are any topics that you want us to discuss or any interaction you want to have with us, by all means, just comment on the post and we'll come back to you with something as best we possibly can in that world. Any coach shout-outs is another one, just because I know Zoe loves the music so much. We'll remind her of this. But if there are any coaches that you want to shout-out along the way, that would be fantastic. Again, send me an email, drop it into the comments. We'll pick it up from there and we'll go from that point. But as we get into this, Under-18 Nationals was about a month ago now. It feels like only yesterday, but it was around about a month ago now. Coops, we'll start on your end. What did you see at Nationals? What did you like? What were the areas of improvement? Those sorts of things.
He liked the gold medal.
Yeah. Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah, pretty obvious one, hey, is seeing Country Vic with a gold medal around their necks. It was an incredible week for us, and obviously talking personally and to our, you know, especially to our community, to win the second gold medal in the program's history. With the last one coming 35 years ago, was pretty incredible. And the ripple effect it had throughout regional Victoria, like some of the messages that I received, was really moving, you know, that this thing had been a long time coming, and especially, you know, when I came into the job and started demanding more of the people involved, more of the coaches, more of the families, you know, more of the athletes getting in the car more, you know, things like that. You know, that's hard, you know, and it's easy for families in particular to turn around and say, you know, no, or why are we doing this? And so to get an end result, to actually be able to go back and say, hey, this is why we're doing this, and to see the joy and the emotion on the faces of, yeah, the athletes and the coaches and the parents was just unbelievable, and definitely made the whole thing worthwhile. So congratulations to everyone involved. You know, it takes a village. So, you know, network coaches, FDP coaches, yourselves. There's so many people that went into making this gold medal a reality, and I can't thank everyone enough. From a basketball standpoint, The reason we won was defense. And, you know, we had some conversations on the pod around, you know, when I got back from Turkey, the new lens that we almost had to look at, you know, on the defensive side of the ball. You know, we had to get more physical, and we had to be smarter about fouling and the way we had to rotate and all those different things. And, you know, Brenton and I had a conversation around what this team was going to look like, you know, 5-6 months ago, and we knew that defense had to be the point of difference, and he really bought into that, which is fantastic, and so did the staff and the athletes. We knew offensively we didn't have as much high, you know, kind of octane players as we've had in the past, so you know, we had to be able to try and turn teams over and get out and run, and we were able to do that, and so yeah, that was the biggest positive takeaway. Room for improvement is the shooting. And unfortunately, it's across the board. It continues to get worse. And for us, you know, there's plenty of reasons to unpack, but we were the number one three-point shooting team in the country at under-18s last year. And then this year, I think we were third bottom. I mean, we shot the three at like 21.9% or something like that, which is just, you know, just... yeah, it just makes life really difficult, and obviously lucky enough that we were able to tick the other boxes, but it was one of the things that, yeah, I immediately kind of dove into my notes and resources and started thinking about, okay, how do we get back on track in this area?
Is it because the defense has got better, that the shooting percentages have dropped?
It's a really good question. I think there is an element to that. Yep. I think that, yeah, we're seeing coaches across the country be more proactive in taking the three-point shot away. But then there was also just the, you know, the old culprit of a lot of re-penetration. A lot of lack of confidence to shoot the three, you know, in players. So, you know, where is that coming from in terms of the, you know, what does their training look like? You know, how do they feel about their technique and so on? But yeah, I think there's many pieces to why the numbers are in the toilet, for lack of a better phrase.
Yeah, and Zoe, there was not a game at Nationals that you did not attend. It felt like over the course. Was it the same from what you saw on your side?
Yes. I'm from a has the defense improved perspective on the girls' side? I'd have to say no, I don't think it has. I think there's a lack of shooting at pace, because I see a lot of girls who can, you know, stand in a spot shooting drill and catch and shoot and hit, you know, 8 of 10, 9 of 10, but then get into gameplay, get the exact same shot with the exact same space, but don't knock it down. So I think it's a bit of a lack of shooting at pace and shooting under that sort of pressure, which is tough, because – and it's – we've got to – I think I said to you guys at Nationals, I've got to find a way to fix this, but we have a really difficult position in terms of court space to be able to shoot. If I was to do a pure shooting drill that you could maybe have two shooters at both ends, I'd have 20-something kids just standing off to the side doing nothing. So I've got to find a way to fix it. It's not an excuse, but there also does need to be some accountability, particularly from the foul line, from our athletes, of getting out and getting shots in your own time and not just, you know, going through the motions and that sort of thing, where it's, oh, look, I'm doing the work. You're not doing the work. That's the statistics are showing us that. Like I said, I'm not completely blameless here. I've got to try and find ways to weave shooting into a small space. But there does need to be, if all the shooting you're doing is at practice, it's not enough. Regardless of whether you've got drills being specific shooting drills.
Yeah. There's no point of difference. Everyone's doing that.
Yeah.
Correct. So, and there's, for mine, there is no excuse from the foul line. None. Yep. Everyone can find a foul line somewhere and a basket. You might not, like, you know, you see in people's backyards, they might not have a half court, you know, to be able to shoot threes and whatever. But you've generally got a foul line. Shoot your free throws. And if at the very worst you're just getting reps at that, then when you get into practice and you're put in a position where then, you know, you're up and down, now go shoot your free throws, there's at least that, again, that muscle memory and stuff there. But I think, yeah, I think there needs to be, like I said, I've got to do better, but also there needs to be some onus on some athletes to actually shoot in their own time. And if that means they have to miss, you know, a domestic game or something like that to get, I would prefer them play, and I know that clubs might have a different opinion, but I would prefer them to get a 45-minute intense shooting session in rather than play, you know, 20 minutes of a domestic game, because these kids are playing and they're already up by 50. So
this is such a great point, and I actually had this situation last night. So I had an athlete, their high-performance session has now changed from a Monday to a Wednesday. And they immediately came back to me and said, oh, well, what should I do on a Monday? And I said, family time, study time, shooting. And then I even actually said, how about just shoot 100 free throws? Mm. Like, that's low impact. You get a ton of free throws done. The first thing he did, he came back to me and said, the youth league trains on Monday night. Should I train with the youth league? And
the collective exhale that's just happened. Yeah. In this room. Like, almost in unison.
Yeah. Yeah. We don't want to take away opportunities from kids, and we love that they are wanting to do these things. The problem is what they're wanting are the things that they perceive as the shiny things. You know, going and playing youth league and playing this and playing that. Ultimately, across the board, and it's not just here; it's everywhere. We're underskilled. Like we need to practice that stuff. And when we talk about shooting, we can't possibly, until we're lucky enough to own a venue like State Basketball Center outright ourselves, where we've got like 18 courts and we can run them all and have a basket each effectively, we're not going to be able to put high amounts of shooting drills into sessions, because it, especially for Coops and myself who have kids that travel, you can't be standing out for 10 minutes. Even 10 minutes standing still is too much. So we're not trying to take this stuff away. And please also keep in mind, we're talking about our top level kids. Mm-hmm. We're not talking about, you know, our under eights or our, you know, or our kids that just play for the love of it, or we're talking about kids that have said to us they want to make basketball a job. And so that's what we're talking about here.
Yeah, and it is a really difficult space to get right, obviously, because and we've spoken about it before, you know, the amount of disadvantaged drills you can do at training sessions and those sorts of things. But it just doesn't replicate the game enough. Like, we can play small-sided games till we're blue in the face. But ultimately, like, and I remember one of the games from the under-18 girls, Zoe, it's like, we were sitting there watching it, and I think they were maybe 1 of 21 from the three-point line. And we were talking about it, and it's like, well, one, that's a bit of a disaster straight off the bat. But two, how many of those shots would you sit there and say, that's actually a bad shot? And I think we sort of counted up, it's like, actually, probably three.
Yeah.
Like, they were all good.
They were the right shots. We just weren't knocking them down. So then the decision had to come of get back into the paint and get on the rim.
Yep.
So we're actually – because for us, we were similar to Coops. Our defense was exceptional.
Yep.
We kept teams to very much losing scores for the majority of the tournament, and it's what got us to fourth was, you know, and into that bronze medal game was the fact we could defend. But it was that click to decision of, you know, we've given them the confidence to shoot the ball, and I want them to shoot the ball, but now the decision has to come of, okay, we're, you know, 1 of 21 or whatever we were at halftime of that game. Oh, my goodness, I can remember it clearly. Now we've got to do some things to put scoreboard pressure on. Once you break the game open a little bit, it's amazing how shots start to drop.
Oh, and momentum.
You know, you start to feel that little bit, you know, the shoulders drop a little bit, there's a little less tension, and the ball starts to go in. So, yeah.
It's shooting at pace, and you both mentioned it, shooting at pace, at tempo, something that looks like, how many times, and I think we've spoken about it before on the pod, it was Steve Nash, and everyone, like, you can Google the Steve Nash shooting drill, which goes for, I'll say, 20-something minutes and just bounces around from various spots on the court and all that sort of stuff. But his thing, effectively, was he needed to train for 40 minutes before he could do his shooting workout so that he was the same level of fatigued as when he actually needed to make a shot in a game, which was the fourth quarter, dying stages. He had to try and find a way to get something. There's no point in him shooting that fresh because he's not fresh in the fourth quarter. He's had to run an entire game trying to organize someone else's offense and get everyone else open, but sometimes he ends up being the shooter.
And that's where the game winner comes, in the fourth.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
It's not in your second quarter, your first quarter. But also, I think, keeping in mind too, different kids need different things. So there might be a kid that comes to you, Coops, and says, oh, youth league train, and you're like, yes, go do that because you need to be up against bigger bodies and, you know, those sort of things. So, you know, it's actually a really fitting topic that we've got today, because I think there's parts of that, you know, if you were to make a decision, if you were to say no, say, for example, to the kid you were talking about last night, but then yes to another kid, I can guarantee that phone's going to ring. And it's going, why isn't my son allowed to play? And, you know, that sort of stuff. So, different kids need different things, and it might mean that one does go off to that youth league, one goes into – one might just do S&C or movement patterns or that sort of stuff. It's it's a tightrope.
It is, and it is difficult. And, look, 18 Nationals was a great tournament again, so congratulations to those – teams that won it, but also for Basketball Australia for putting it on. And I'll say the Queensland government, I think, for hosting it off the top of my head. We had our fair share of GYG over the course of that week. Like, it was out of control, but delicious. So if they're looking to sponsor a podcast, for example, more than happy to hear it. But it really was a good week of nationals. And obviously with the under-16s coming up in Bendigo in July, and I know the vast majority of our listenership is Victorian-based for sure. If you can get up there for a little bit and have a look at exactly what you two are both talking about, would absolutely recommend it. It is a Nationals is a wonderful tournament for a number of reasons. One, it's great to see the best junior players coming through and just see where they're at. Is there a kid from your town or that you know that you think, gee, they're really good, and then they get there and it's like, wow, they are really good, but they're really, really good, who they're playing against, those types of things. Gives a little bit of perspective as to what we're all dealing with, I think, as coaches. Yeah. But it is just a really fun environment. Like, it was enjoyable. This is one of the first times I've gone up with zero responsibility over the course of the week and just being able to sit there and watch basketball. And it's like, oh, actually, this is fun. And surprisingly, no pressure. I don't care if that shot goes in or not because it's like, doesn't impact my day. Like, this is actually, well, a few of them did.
It did impact your day, I'll be honest.
There were a few impacted days over the course, you know, 1 of 21. That's impacting everyone's day. But it is a great tournament to go and have a watch of. And like with under 16 has always been my favourite tournament because it's kind of like the first intro point into state teams and those sorts of things. And it is pure basketball. Like, it is kids play for the enjoyment of it and the fulfillment of it and those sorts of things. And it was good to catch up with a number of coaches up there that I haven't seen for a long time. Like, Matt Neeson was coaching the New South Wales Country Men. And for those of you that may not be aware, Matt Neeson was a Vic Metro coach way back, like when I first started in the program, like 2005 or 6 or whenever it was. Matt was an assistant coach, and you know, he's gone his own path and done various things and been an administrator, a coach and all these sorts of things. But he was coaching the New South Country Men, who I thought were a good group but not a great group. Like, that, you know, I wouldn't have thought they would have been around the pointy end of medals and those sorts of things, but they were a good group. But the way he coached them over the course of the week, wrapped with. Like, he coached that thing really well. He just, one of those coaches that I think coach is always coaching, doesn't stop coaching. He's always trying to make people better around him. The buy-in from that group in particular was really good. Rod Anderson was coaching Queensland North Men, who's an avid listener of the podcast. Like, at one stage, I think the three of us were sitting on a stand, and he's like, hey, do I get my own personal podcast? Like,
you get a shout out.
Like, you got to sit through some ads if you want all three of us at the same time. But it is good to see how many people are just in that environment and enjoying it. Like, I thought it was a really good place.
Well, I think overall, I can't speak too much for the men's side. Coops, you might have to make comment, but definitely on the women's side, the level of coaching took a step up this year, I thought, across the board. You know, I think it was really good to see some of the things that the coaches were trying to do and trying to – it didn't always work, but you could see what their vision was and, you know, the use of timeouts and use of strategy, advance the ball, not advance the ball, all that sort of stuff. I thought was at another level than it was last year, which was really pleasing because our kids are only going to benefit from that.
Yeah, totally agree. I thought it was a big step up from the previous year. Definitely coaches looked like they had a plan. The coaching was consistent. One of the things I really liked was seeing pretty much every team have an understanding of how to play through their best players. Yeah, there was a plan to do that. You know, if we've got a really good guard, let's come back to middle ball screen. Let's get, you know, let's play through them. Or if we've got size, you know, let's try and roll it in the post or whatever it may be. But there was a real thought process. You could see it. And that's a credit to everyone involved.
Absolutely. So the topic which we've alluded to previously is, it came about because I was talking to another coach and it's like, oh, if only parents and players knew what I went through. And it's like, oh, okay. Like, this is place we've all been as coaches at various stages, but it is like what we're talking about is what we wish parents and players knew about coaches. And I mean, we can go on a million different tangents on this one, but the first one I suppose that I would like to hit on is we feel just as much as you do. Like, if things aren't going well, you best believe we're wearing that as well. Like, we still have the same sleepless nights, we still have that same drive home, we still have every feeling and emotion you're having. It's tenfold on the coach because we know everyone's looking to us to solve this, whether it's been a losing streak, whether it be a lack of attendance at practice, whatever the case might be, we feel it too. And that's the biggest thing is we have lives away from this. And I think that, I mean, what would we be talking? I'll pick a number. 99.9% of our coaches would be volunteers. They do this as a pastime, not because they're earning money from it and this is their career path or career trajectory or anything like that. We feel it. Like, if something sucks, we know it sucks. We don't need it highlighted. Our job is to try and find the solution as to why it sucks and try and bring you along for the ride as we possibly can. Like, it's hard to really delve too much into it without going into too many specifics, but, you know, as coaches, we feel the pain that you as parents and players are potentially going through as well. Like, it's not unique. It's just different. And I suppose the difference is, at times, as coaches, we put our lives in the hands of our players and can be a little bit let down. Like, we can put you in the position to, like we were talking about it yesterday, Zoe, there was a player that's just signed a recent contract and had spoken about, oh, you know, we've got some unfinished business with this team and all that sort of stuff. It's like, yeah, but you missed the layup that would have put them into playoffs. Like, the coach did what they were supposed to do. Like, they got you the shot. You know, it's that kind of stuff that can make or break what you're doing.
Well, and I think with that too comes, I know I often get misunderstood, I guess, by parents because I keep them at an arm's length. And it's not that I don't like them. I'm sure they're lovely.
I'm not willing to check, but I'm sure. But,
you know what? I'm not.
Yeah.
Because I've been burnt so badly in the past that, unfortunately, to protect myself, these parents or all the parents that come through are basically painted with the same brush. And I know that's horrible, but some of the things that – I mean, if we had like a talking split horror stories, some of the stories.
Some music for that. There's been a lot of Treehouse of Horrors that we could get into if we needed to.
But that could be there's some stuff that, you know, and it's not until I think sometimes, and it's like us as coaches, like it's not until I've looked back at some of my behaviour as a coach that I've gone, oh, my God, that is so embarrassing. What was I doing? You know, and I think it's probably similar with parents. But that's what tends to happen. And I suppose one of the things I wish they knew is it's not that I'm trying to be a hard ass or, you know, I'm trying to have this exterior and all that. I'm trying to protect myself. It's a vulnerability thing because, for example, I'll give you an example. So I had an athlete that I was coaching in juniors and did a lot of indies, did, you know, when I say did a lot, I did my job, but I cared a lot for, and the family seemed to care about me, you know, ask questions, do you need a lift, do you need this, do you need that, what can I do for you, da, da, da. And then the next year came, I wasn't coaching that athlete anymore, saw them at the stadium, went to go over to say hi, completely wiped. Like completely wiped. And I'm like, I'm trying to think back. Did something happen? Did I say something? And I'm like processing all this of what have I done wrong? And it wasn't until I spoke to a more experienced coach who said, you can't help them anymore. And that's what's happened. Yeah. They're all for you when you can help them. You can't help them anymore. It's nothing you've done. And I was like, oh, that sucks. Like, but it was hurtful as well. Like,
the flip side of that, there are plenty of coaches that are like that too.
100%.
Where it's like they're all over players when, you know, they're coaching them, but the second they're done, out.
Yeah.
Not interested in them anymore. And it's like, well, do you care or do you not care?
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like a light switch. It's either on or it's off. There's no dimmer.
Yeah.
And it's that kind of thing where I think, you know, if you truly value a relationship with a player and a family, invest in it. And if you don't, that's okay. But understand that you probably won't go as far trying to have to drag someone along or being – I'm just trying to find the right word for it, and I don't quite have it. But if you're not fully invested, it will not be what you want it to be.
Yeah. That's why these Instagram coaches who are doing these private runs and things like that, that's where they're going to stay.
Yep.
Because they're in a transactional way of thinking. They're using these kids to try and further their own careers. It's backwards to what coaching is all about. I think what you guys are talking about is spot on. The best coaches are empaths. The best coaches are compassionate. We're in a relationship business. You know, we care about the athletes. We care about their lives. We care about what we're doing. And all the things that are happening in that space, in our team or our programs around, you know, a kid dealing with the loss of a grandparent, or the kid dealing with not playing very well, or a family going through a hard time, or, you know, the team isn't doing well. Like, we carry that stuff. Like, we really do. And the best coaches do that. And they're finding ways to not only deal with the team's performance, but dealing with those other things as well, to be a support network, to be there for them. And you know, and it's not just at our level working with kids, it goes all the way up. Like, you know, Coach Pop obviously is just retired, you know, which is pretty significant, you know, unbelievable coach, you know, big impact on so many people around the world, including us, and famous for his ability to be there for people, you know, to create these dinners and, you know, get to know people and create an environment of sharing and vulnerability and support. And that just shows, you know, what it means to be a coach, and also for hopefully what the community needs to remember is that we are carrying a lot of stuff day in, day out.
And it's one of the things for coaches. Unfortunately, we can't protect you from this. You probably don't believe it until it happens to you, and you have to go through it. You know, this isn't something that you can sit behind a computer screen and be protected from. It is something you have to get in front of people, get into these positions, and unfortunately, probably have to go through. But you will come out better. You'll find these ways to, like, I've probably been a bit harsh. I'm certainly not rude to parents. I'm nice to
a couple over the years.
Hang on, they deserved it. No,
parents weigh in on the comments.
But no, still say hi. Still have you know. But that next step of actually being friends is something that I don't do. But you have to find that way yourself as well. And I think we get a lot of young coaches today. I could be wrong, but from what I've seen, a lot of young coaches today they're very research driven. So they're reading a lot of articles, reading a lot of books, doing a lot of online training, doing, you know, all that sort of stuff. It doesn't help you. Like, sorry, it does, but it doesn't help you with the real stuff. And the real stuff with coaching is people. And you've got to get yourself in front of people, otherwise it's not going to work.
Yep. One of the next ones I had here is that, and I hope this is the case, I've thrown it out there, as coaches we can't be bought. Like, it's that whole mentality of, hey, if we are friends, you'll further my... No, we won't. Like, it's just how it is. Like, it's... Yeah, there might be some younger, inexperienced coaches that maybe haven't had the reps to see what's going on and how it's happening. But ultimately, as coaches, our job is to coach the kids in front of us the best way we possibly can. And that's the base level of what you should really expect as a parent. The whole, hey, can I get you a coffee? Or, hey, how about you come around to our place? No, that's not really what this is about, which ties into what you're talking about there, Zoe. Like, and I know you two might be different, but this is where I'm sort of at with it. I'm happy to talk to parents about their kids. I'm not happy to compare them because that's an immediate, hey, we're stopping this conversation. If you want to work out, no worries. Like, let's find a time. Let's find something that works for you. That's fine. But you can't buy the integrity that comes with, oh, because of this, now you're going to get that. No, that's not how... You've got to draw a line there.
I wish that was true.
Yep.
Unfortunately, particularly at a junior level, I've seen it a lot. There's a lot of kids that are unfortunately getting more because they're doing paid indies with their coach. For mine... No indie with your own team should be paid for. That's just, that should never happen. And any coach that's charging their own kids as a parent, be wary of that because I personally think from an integrity perspective, that's wrong. Now, if you're doing indies for athletes outside of your team, well, of course you know, charge for your time and your expertise. I'm not saying people shouldn't make money out of basketball, of course. But it blurs the lines and it just opens you up. It's like just what we were talking about before. I always say to the state team coaches, particularly when we're in the process of selecting, don't speak to parents, don't accept anything off of them, nothing. Don't do a thing. If they need to tell anyone something, they can tell me or they can tell the team manager, but you yourself, don't, because all it takes is that one conversation to look like something.
It's perception. The kid gets
picked, and all of a sudden that's the only reason the kid got picked. But unfortunately, we are talking about the best of us. And so, no, our integrity can't be bought. Unfortunately, we're not all the best of us. So I would say to parents, just be mindful if a head coach of your kid or a coach of your kid or, frankly, a DOC is charging you for individuals. A DOC, in my mind, that's a part of their role. So that should be in a program based from the club. And your head coach, it's a part of their job. That's what they're there to do.
Yep. Yeah, it's a great point. I totally agree. And the other part too for me is that hoping that people understand that coaches, we have a plan for each kid. Like we have a file in our head, or it might actually be a file in our computer. Like for our MPP kids, they have what we call an individual development plan, an IDP. So we actually have a resource that's shared between us, them, their network, the DSC, and so on. We have a file. We have a plan for each kid in our head based on their work ethic, based on their dedication to the sport, their love for the sport, their talent, their potential, their anthropometrics, all these sorts of things. Like we're actually thinking about that consistently, and we're thinking about them as individuals. We don't walk in to a team or a session with a blanket, you know, idea of how much I'm going to give each athlete, how I'm going to coach each athlete, and then I can either go up or down based on the free coffee or if that kid's being a shit today, you know. Like it doesn't work that way. You know, I'm thinking, okay, Zoe, you know, needs some love today. She's had, you know, a rough week, so I'm going to make sure that that's part of my coaching plan with her. Rob's shooting really well at the moment. Is there a way that we can maybe get him some extra looks? You know, so I'm thinking about those things, and there's no outside influence that's going to impact that.
Yep. I think one of the other ones is, and I say this with an asterisk knowing that some will be, most of us aren't qualified for the sports psychology that we have to implement and dish out at times. And we are flying a little bit by the seat of our pants, and we are dealing with the athlete that's in front of us, and how can we do that? And we can only do that with relationships, etc. If you're not a sports psychologist, or if your coach is not a sports psychologist, don't go to them with sports psychology questions, because they will pretty much just jump on the old Dr. Google and see what pops up. And it's like, oh, ChatGPT says this. No. That's not their world. Now, you can go to them with saying, hey, we have seen a psych, a sports psych, whatever the case might be. Here's the output from it. Can you work with this within your coaching framework? Absolutely. More than happy to go with that. But just be careful taking sports psychology advice or psychology advice from people that aren't qualified to give it.
Well, and from a coach perspective, don't take that on.
Yep.
Like for sure. It's, and I wish parents and players knew that we do. Like some of the things interactions I've had with athletes, even just over this last 6 years within this role, it's been frightening. And I have sat and worried and not slept, and you know, just to until I knew that athlete was okay, or until I could see them again, or until I could talk to them again. Don't take that on if you're not qualified, because I wasn't, and it was too much. But also then from something I wish the players and the parents knew, we're always there. I'm just better at directing it now. So instead of taking it, I'm like, okay, here's what we need to do. We need to get to the to a GP, or we need to get to a sports psych, or we need to get to somebody qualified. You know, I always thank them for bringing it to me. Here's where we're going to go from here. And so then once they're in the hands of those qualified people, I automatically feel better. Like, but
tension release, yeah, from the shoulders.
Because it's like, yeah. But that tension and that fear was because, one, I cared so deeply for the and felt so awful for what they were going through, whatever it was at the time. But I didn't know what to do. And that's where most of it came from, was I am so not ready for this. And I don't know what I'm doing. And if I do the wrong thing, this could lead to that. And your mind wanders, and maybe sure. other people's don't, but mine does. And it wanders into these awful scenarios of what's potentially going to happen, but also never did. But now having that, no, we're not doing that. We're going to go see these people. We're going to do this. This is how we're going to help. We're going to go from there. Or even, you know, yep, I'll have a chat with your parents, or, you know, that sort of thing. Just make sure you know what those processes are if you're going to coach young people. One, it's what's best for them. But two, it's definitely what's best for you.
Yep. Yeah, there's two aspects to this, right? There's performance and then there's personal. And the lines can be blurred very quickly by all involved. And so trying to get a good understanding of those two things is important. And that would be another one that I would, you know, hope parents understand. And I say it to the athletes all the time. When I'm coaching you on the floor and I'm coaching you hard, because that's what I do, like I'm a competitor and that's how I find the best way to coach people and try and drive them. And rightly or wrongly, like not everyone coaches that way. I say it's performance, it's not personal. So if I raise my voice because I'm trying to motivate you or whatever it may be, I'm coaching the performance. It has nothing to do with you as an individual. Once the whistle stops blowing, once we walk off the floor, now we're talking about personal. And so if we can understand what's impacting the athlete's ability to perform, is it a performance-based issue that may be around goal setting or something like that that's within our coach parameters, great. But if it is personal, then we want to have that clear structure around support and who's addressing those issues so that everyone can get the right help that they need and coaches aren't taking on things that they're not trained for.
Another point to that, because that is so spot on, tell us before the fact, not after it falls apart.
Yeah, great one.
Because if we don't know, we're assuming you're going into practice, game, whatever it is, and everything's okay. So we coach you to your standard, you're not okay, and now everything's not okay. and we find out after. And there's a couple reasons why it's really important. One, especially if they're going through some personal issues. You don't have to tell the coach what it is as well, by the way. It doesn't have to, you know, but just sort of alluding to there's some things going on, and so the coach can be aware of it. They're going to coach him differently, like you mentioned before. So then you don't reach that point of like that breaking point. But two, because I've had it before where I found out after the fact, and oh, the guilt. The guilt was awful. Yeah. And look, it's not all about us. In fact, it's rarely about us. But I would prefer to live without that guilt if possible. So if you could tell us beforehand, you know, we can make sure we put things in place for the session to not, like I said, reach that breaking point. But yeah, it's. I know it's tough because I think people are reluctant to share what's going on. I think sometimes, particularly in a performance environment, it's almost seen as a weakness. Any coach that sees it like that, again, that's a coach to be wary of. Yeah. Your best coaches are going to embrace that, and they're going to want to know that information. So find them.
And it is something you alluded to there as well, Zoe, with we don't know we don't need to know the details, sorry. Mm. Like we had it with one of our teams where they had like a little bit of a safe word where it's like if they just walked into practice and it had been a week or a day or whatever it is, drop that word on me as you're walking past and I say, hey, how are you going? It's like, cool. Like tonight's not the night. Mm. Like tonight is the night to get them through the session and get them happy and leaving in a good space rather than to pile on and make it feel worse. But, and we were talking about this just before we started recording, some kids aren't great at conveying messages, thoughts, feelings, emotions. So for us, we just sort of found that one buzzword was just like a really easy way of saying, hey, not all okay, good. Like now I know, I don't need to know the details. And it would usually be followed up with, hey, are you safe? Like is everything all right in that end? But it was just a really easy way of just sort of trying to know what's going on without having to know exactly what's going on. It was more you deal with the result of what's happened in that sort of space. One of the other ones I got on here is we not playing – when we don't put someone on the court, it's not a personal thing. Like it's – funnily enough, coaches do enjoy winning, and this is at all level. Like this can be from green and gold all the way down to under eights, hit and giggle stuff. We do tend to put players on the court that we think can help. Mm. And if they're not on the court, well, maybe we don't think they can help in whatever capacity that might be. Again, it's performance. It's not personal. Now, I do have some opinions on what court time should look like at various stages as well. Because if you're not getting court time in your under eights competition, you
find another team.
be asking the question. In an ideal world, we would play all of our kids 20 minutes each. And we would just literally just oh, okay, clock done, next person in, and we rotate through. Games don't work like that. Injuries happen, fouls happen. Fluctuating numbers happen, like tactics happen. We get it. Okay, it's going to change. I can assure you, we feel just as bad about the lack of court time for a player as you probably do about your child not having court time or the player feeling like I didn't get played enough. We carry that with us as well. I promise you, there have been times where I've driven on the way home from somewhere and it's like, I shafted that kid. Like it's, you know, there was one in a state team, oddly enough. We got to the gold medal game. One of the kids that I had went in early, played okay, but the game was just tight the entire way through and I couldn't find another way to get them in. And I'd trusted that kid all week, but didn't play them in the final again. And it's like, I regret that. I really should have found a way to get, like, they deserved another crack. Mm-hmm. They could have been the difference between, hey, do we win that? Do we lose that? You know, ultimately, probably not. But it is one of those areas too where not playing someone, we feel that just as much as everyone else. We don't do it because we enjoy making people feel bad or anything like that. There comes a certain level of basketball where court time won't be even and we have to be okay with that. It's, for mine, can your reaction as a player or as a parent help or hinder from that moment? Now, if it is a case of, yeah, that coach is a jerk, I can't believe they didn't put you on either, let's call that hindering. Like it's, but it's like, hey, okay, do you understand why? Was there anything you felt like you could have done differently? Like try and unpack it, but also don't try and solve the problem. Like it's not your job as the parent to try and work out why you didn't get caught or your child didn't get caught time or the player. Now, if they want to talk about it, the player wants to talk about it, okay, chat. You can still be a parent. There's nothing wrong. But just make sure you don't blur the lines because that makes our job as coaches so much harder that we're now not dealing with one potentially upset person. We're dealing with probably three or four by the time you go down, parents, siblings, whatever the case might be. And, you know, I'll be perfectly honest, there were times at Nationals where kids didn't get in or they didn't get the minutes they thought they were going to get to. And it was disastrous after the game because they felt that emotion so much of I've trained all this time to get to this point. It's like, yeah, I get it. Like, but if they thought you could have helped, the coach probably would have put you in.
Yeah, I know it would be hard as a parent when your kid
absolutely
is hurting.
Yep, not dismissing that at
so
all.
So absolutely understand. I think what also needs to be understood, though, is sometimes that's life, and I know that sounds harsh, but the world, the real world, is not fair and even. It's not how you definitely, you know, you might have a goal. The world might not give it to you. Like it's, you know, you could work, do everything right, work hard, work hard, work hard. You still might not get there because that's not how the world works. So if we are constantly making excuses for it being other people's fault, that, you know, things didn't go your way, we're not setting our, I don't think we're setting our athletes up to succeed in the real world, not just in the performance or basketball world. And again, I know that that comes across quite harsh, but that's also life too. but I think
certainly levels. Like domestic 100%. Basketball, play again, everyone.
Like I said before, we're talking about these performance levels, these state teams, these, you know, all but that sort of stuff.
VJBL is really just an extension of domestic basketball.
100%.
Like there is so much basketball that goes on a Friday night. Okay, realistically, probably the top three teams in VC could all win it. Mm. But outside of that, you're playing for numbers and placings. You might get lucky and, you know, you get a little bit of a good run somewhere, but for mine, there's no excuse not to get those players in if you're the coach either. Like, how do you expect them to develop and fall in love with the sport and want to keep coming back if they never get to see the court? But so it's twofold.
At a performance level, like if we're talking state teams, if our teams don't perform, we cop it.
Mm.
but also, if they're not getting wins, then parents are unhappy with that too. So it's sort of...
You don't
sometimes you can't have everything.
Yep.
Sometimes we can give you a win, but maybe only, you know, three quarters of the team are going to play. Or we can play everyone, but you're not going to win. They are very real options for a lot of teams.
Yep.
So it's you're starting to get a bit of insight into what coaches have to go through, because everyone wants to play, but everyone wants to win. But everyone wants to develop and everyone wants to go on to the next thing, and it's that coach's job to get them there.
it's a
for
lot
a volunteer, that is a lot.
Yeah, I think that's really important, and that should be sparking the narrative at home, you know, because a part of this too is that coaches are human and coaches are going to make mistakes, sometimes multiple mistakes. And you know, what's that conversation like at home? Are we, putting coaches on a pedestal and expecting them to be perfect, and when they don't, they obviously have an ulterior motive and they hate you and all this sort of stuff? Is that what's happening? Because obviously that's pretty toxic. Or are the conversations being had, they're a human, or they've got a young kid, maybe they're not sleeping. All these different things that play into a coach's ability to perform.
But before you go on, I love that, because that's teaching your child empathy.
Right.
Like, oh, they've got a young kid. They might not be sleeping well. Look past what's right in front of you and care about the person. I think that's great.
Yeah. And that's, again, the hope is, you know, parents and beyond that in our community, that they are thinking about those sorts of things, that you know, we're not some superhuman cardboard cutout. You know, like some robot, like we're all human. We're all dealing with our own things, and it's going to impact the way that we coach sometimes. So that narrative, I think, is really important. And then, the other one is just, again, talking about what you guys said, you know, why didn't I get on the floor? What are some things I'm in control of? And it should only really be once, maybe twice. And then that falls back into that great example, what you're talking about, Zoe, in terms of basketball being that vehicle for life. You know, it's like, hey, here's some adversity. Now, if it's happening every week, there's obviously a deeper issue, right? And that can be kind of dealt with at another time. But I think, again, the narrative around coaches are human, let's look past performance in that area, and, yeah, how do we deal with adversity and when that's expressed through court time? I think they're two really good things.
Well, and part of it too, I think, is, okay, if you haven't got the court time, you would usually get all the court time you want. Is your child happy for the person that did?
Mm.
And that's a big part of it as well.
Love like, that.
Are they a good person? Mm. And I put that in air quotes. Obviously, the audio medium not being overly kind to me there. But it is. Like I think you've got to go about teaching the right things the right way, and sometimes it won't be expressed in court time.
How often do you see athletes that played really well but lost being over the moon?
Yeah.
and then athletes team that won but they didn't play much or at all being devastated. Yeah. Like that for me. And again, we're asking some pretty adult emotional responses, absolutely. Right? But that this is how I think from coaches what we would want parents to help us with is help drive that. Of we're not saying they have to you know, be able to be stone-faced and not, you know, not feel, but try and drive that in the right direction. But I think I saw an article online the other day. I'm so terrible at citing references. But there was a part of it and it was like everybody now, parents, players, coaches, definitely coaches as well, are asking what can basketball give them as opposed to what can they give basketball.
Mm.
And it's, you know, that's what drives a lot of this frustration and anger and hurt is because, you know, I need to play these minutes to get these scores to make that team to then make this to – so basketball can give me all of this stuff as opposed to what can you give basketball in a sense of – you know, are you what you were saying before? Are you somebody that people love to be around? Are you somebody that is happy for others? Are you somebody that can sacrifice? Are you somebody that gives 110% every time they step on the floor, takes, you know, takes on feedback, takes on instruction, implements it, does all of that, shows gratitude, says thank you to the people that are trying to help them instead of just expecting it and all that sort of stuff. And I think that's probably where we've headed as a sport. And it's not just parents and athletes, it's coaches too. Because I think we've spoken about it on the pod before. A lot of coaches want everything yesterday. That's a bit of a byproduct of that, you know, basketball needs to give me these things.
Yep. One of the next ones I had is the impact of a late pull out of training. That frustrates us. It'd be fair to say if we've gone to put a session plan together, we've divided people into teams, we know how this thing's going to run, and all of a sudden this training session plan that relied on having 8 players at practice now all of a sudden only has 7, that screws up the whole thing.
Mm.
The earlier you can tell us, the better. And you could have the greatest reason in the world for why you have to tell me 3 minutes before practice that you won't be at practice. I get it. Stuff happens. It happens continually. But if you know that in 3 weeks' time you're not going to be at that practice session, tell me 3 weeks earlier and just remind me beforehand and I'll be okay with it. Like, it's, we all get it, but it is a tough one that sometimes, oh yeah, by the way, I can't be there tonight. Okay, well, there goes that session plan. We can't get done all the things we needed to get done for whatever reason. Like, the more open and clear communication between parents, players and coaches, I think the better in that sort of space. And whether it be training, whether it be games, whatever it might look like. Coaches, and I know what, well, okay, I might be brandishing everyone with this. We'll use Rob as an example on this one. I am great at filling the void with negativity. Okay. Now, part of that is because of my brain, which goes into why they're not at practice. This could be one of 18 different reasons. Okay, let's explore all 18 of these reasons as to why this is potentially happening. Is it because I've annoyed them? Is something going on at home? I'll go through every single one of them. If it's just as simple as, hey, I can't make it because I've got school production that night. All right, cool. Like, at least I know. Yeah. Like, it's that kind of thing. So you've got to be really careful. How much does a coach need to know? Because they don't need to know the inner workings of everything that goes on in home life, family life, etc. But it's amazing how often open communication and honest communication can solve problems before they become a problem in that space. So just, I think, being, you know, don't fear it. Like, there, and look, I've had this situation before. I was talking to a parent and they're like, we have to miss training this week because my child's on school camp and I don't want to tell the coach because they're going to yell at me. And it's like, well... unfortunately, you're gonna have to let them know. How many
other practices have you missed?
Exactly. Well, and that's part of it. Like, if this is a continual
school camp's
thing,
not something you should be getting in trouble for. No, but if you've missed for some other reasons.
Yeah, it can happen fairly regularly, I think.
I think importantly for parents to understand, and again, you know, this is not limited to parents. You know, this is again for our broader community, is what goes into creating a practice plan. And the best coaches understand that practice planning is one of our most important jobs.
Yep.
And there's a great old adage that says, like, planning a practice should take you twice as long as a practice is. So if you've got an hour practice, it should take you 2 hours to plan it. And that's what the best coaches do. They're meticulous. They're thinking about the flow of the practice. They're thinking about what drills. They're thinking about how does the drill create impact the purpose. You know, is there a theme for the practice? How is the practice related to last practice? How is that practice related to the game?
How can you weave in individual skill development into
right
for what in line with the IDP? And
yeah. Benny yes. is so impressed that I know I'm going to have yeah. to see on Friday night, which is team focused as opposed to individuals. Like there's so much.
Yeah, it is. Like it's just it's so in depth, and when little things like a last minute pullout, you know, can unravel two and a half hours worth of work, you can understand why coaches can get frustrated.
Yeah, and it's have spare a thought for the people that are at practice. You've now gone and put the coach in a fairly average mood.
On the flip side, though, from a coach's perspective, parents and athletes deserve the same courtesy.
For sure.
Of if you're not – one, you're not going to be there, but also I've heard a lot lately of clubs or coaches just last minute changing their training to a different day. Like when I say last minute, like the it's a Friday. Oh yeah, next week we're training on a Wednesday instead of a Tuesday or something like that. Like it seems to be happening a bit. Sometimes that comes through, you know, like a venue or whatever. Mm-hmm. But if you can avoid that because families put it, it I don't know if I remember seeing our sort of calendar and how the schedule would go and you get to there and you'd pick them up from there and then you do like there's a lot that goes into it. So as coaches we've got to be mindful of that as well and considerate of that too.
Definitely.
A couple of last ones that I had on here. Volunteering for a job will save issues of having to ask someone to do a job. So whether that be scoring, filming, team, whatever it is, I can assure you parents, we as coaches hate having to go on the hunt for a score or someone to film a game and you almost walk over there really meekly and it's like, can someone film for me, please? Yeah. Like it's that kind of thing. If you can just put your hand up or just say, hey, look, I've got a younger sibling or an older sibling that's happy to film this game for you, it's like that is just such a relief straight off the bat that can solve you some problems.
Or be the parent that creates the roster.
Absolutely.
You know, so yep. everyone can chip in.
Definitely.
And again, it's done without the coach having to get involved.
Yep, that's a huge win. And just remember, we all do have bad days. Like, we screw some stuff up. We'd love to, like a new hit on it before, Coops, we make mistakes as coaches. This happens all the time. Be caring and forgiving on that one that, hey, look, if this is the same mistake that keeps happening, okay. Maybe there's a problem somewhere, but if it's a one-off where it's like, my child didn't get court time, it's like, hold on, your child averages 30 minutes a game and this week they got 26 and you're unhappy about that, maybe that's a conversation you should shelve in that one. But it is something you have, do have to be really mindful of as well. I think that like the coaches are volunteers. They are going to make mistakes. The hope is that they grow from them and they learn from them, just as players will make mistakes, parents will make mistakes. Then, you know, there'll be interactions that all of us that we look back on go, yep, that wasn't my best. Like, and that's going to happen. But that's okay. You try and avoid them so that happens once and it doesn't happen two or three times. But just remember that we are all volunteers and we do carry this burden with us at times. Like, coaching seems like a great idea until you actually have to coach.
And coaching is great. This is the thing. Yeah. Like, we're talking like all parents are the worst. They're not. They're actually a really small.
Yep.
Small minority. The problem is they're the loudest. and they are merciless. they just don't stop.
Well, I understand it too. But because the most important thing in their world is their child.
Yeah. And yeah, I get it. 100%.
I completely understand it.
But I don't want to scare any coaches off from coaching because coaching is unbelievable and unbelievably fulfilling.
Yeah. We're also trying to warn people.
But
look, these are some mistakes that we've made. Here's how you can avoid them, which I think is part of it.
And that the majority of people you will deal with are great people.
Yeah.
Yep. But, yeah, if you just put a few things in to protect yourself, then you should be okay. But also know that you will encounter the minority of not so nice people at some point, and hopefully we've helped with how to deal with that.
Absolutely. All right, into social split talk for this week.
Something to post on Facebook. Let's go.
It's like me on Twitter.
Okay, so there are two clips for this, if I get this right, and there's a very real possibility that I won't, and this will be the wrong clip. But we will see how we go with this one. These are from Dr. Becky from Duke University. And that's
not it.
Thanks
for listening to this episode of The Talking Code.
So we have to edit because of you now?
Yes. No, yes. 100%
my fault. He is human. Yes.
100% my fault. And the worst bit is, like, when it starts playing, I don't know how to stop it. So it just, like, keeps going. Anyway, Dr. Beggett from Duke.
Actually, that's a good question. What does resilience feel like?
I think the word resilience has a positive connotation, but when you're being resilient, it definitely does not feel positive.
I think that's so beautiful. Being resilient doesn't feel resilient at all. It feels so messy. Another way of thinking about it is we also have not knowing and knowing. The space between not knowing something and knowing something is really painful, especially if you've fashioned yourself to be someone who's academically talented, because then it almost feels like your academic success or your identity as a smart person is tied to knowing. When you're in the space of that, it's really easy to want to exit something. So this has a name in my mind, right? It's called the learning space. This is actually what learning, no matter what you're learning, something on the job, something from puzzles, learning to read, you don't know how to do it, you want to know how to do it. And what I think is really empowering to know is the learning space has one feeling associated with it, frustration. That's literally how learning feels. And if you think about that, then frustration becomes this actually like almost amazing thing you can learn to love, even though it's painful, because you're like, this is actually a sign that I'm learning. Whenever you're frustrated, it literally means you're somewhere in the learning space. And why frustration tolerance is so important is because people think that resilience and success comes from getting to knowing as soon as possible. They're wrong. Resilience and success comes from the length of time you can just tolerate being in this space. The longer you can tolerate being here, the more you will ride this, and the more you'll eventually come here.
I thought that was incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was sorry, that was just my face.
Oh, I think I'd be better at reading this by now, but apparently not. The second clip from Dr. Beckett, if this plays, I'll be amazed, but we'll see how we go. This is adding to my editing time during the week.
What's the best piece of parenting advice that you've ever heard?
Winners lose more than losers, and if you don't let your kids fail, they'll become a loser.
We don't want losers.
That summarizes my frustration with every parent that did everything for their kids. I remember recently we were at a soccer tournament this past summer. Our kids are 12 years old, and the kid ran to the sideline, put his shoe out so the mom could tie his shoe. And I was like, wow. Problem is that you just set the precedence. If we don't get this early, it's just going to be a bigger problem later.
So a couple of things that come with these two clips in particular, both of them from Dr. Becky from Duke University, and they just popped up in my timeline, so I don't know what my timeline is trying to tell me at this stage, but a couple of things from that. One, and it's both of you have spoken about it during this pod, we need to make kids be okay with being uncomfortable, and we need to have them screw some things up, and we need to build resilient kids. But we also have to be a little bit careful about how much we do for them. Are we creating an environment where they have to be not self-sufficient completely is not quite where we want to be at. But you know, how many times have we seen a kid at a game or a training session throw their drink bottle at their parent and say, go fill this up. And like I'm waiting for the day where the parent throws it back and says, no thanks, go and do it yourself.
It's funny, I got a story like about that. Oh. Yes. I was doing, during COVID, doing some indies outdoors for our 1 hour with nieces and nephews, and my niece did exactly that. Threw her drink bottle at her dad and went, can you fill it up? And I was clearly missing coaching. And I'm like, stop. I was like, if you were on a floor with me while I was working, you would be off the floor right now. I said, you do not throw your drink bottle like that at your dad. I said, you do not fill it up until she asks you properly. And she's like, takes it off him, walks over, hands it to him. Dad, can you please fill up my drink bottle? He goes, yes, I can, and walks off. But it is those little things. It's like, Coop, she would have been the same, you know, like with your your bag that you took to basketball, you pack it, you carry it. Like it's, you know, but I'm seeing all the time parents carrying their kids' bags and again, it's they're wanting to do for them, but it's what's the result?
And that's the concern. I suppose we do have to make kids that are reliable and those sorts of things. And, you know, sometimes it's on you. You screw something up, you've got to go fix it. That's just kind of how it rolls. But the resilient side of things is, hey, you're not always going to hear everything you want to hear and you're going to struggle with some stuff. And the struggle is fine.
Yeah, I think that ties into the training environment. You know, I was listening to a performance psychologist this morning talking about the difference between training and competing and how quickly, especially this time of year, where we're just training.
Yep.
Like it's very easy to just kind of show up, go through the motions. We're expecting that that training's going to have some sort of output later on. It doesn't really, because we're not in that learning space that Dr. Becky's talking about. You know, how uncomfortable can we get? How many times can we hit that point of learning frustration, you know, and then have a conversation about it and then move on? And I think we've got to be really conscious of that as coaches and parents, is what does this training environment look like? Are we competing enough to get us into uncomfortable? And then adding the resilience and the gratitude and the behaviors around that environment and how it relates to those moments. So I think that's on all of us to really kind of knuckle down a little bit, especially in this kind of fat part of the year where it gets cold and monotonous. Definitely. Are we on it?
And it's interesting. I'll come to you in a second. Like, we obviously spoke at the very start of this about the gold medal from the countrymen at under 18 nationals recently. That's not the only reason they enjoyed that tournament. Like, it's a nice reward for sure. I'm certain had they lost that, they would have walked away from the week saying, hey, that was still a good week. We enjoyed it. Like, we got better.
Yep.
Yeah, not the outcome we wanted. However, we still enjoyed the week. That's how you know if it's a good environment or not, like straight away.
Absolutely, 100%. Like, there's just so much more that goes into this than just putting the ball into the hole.
Yep.
And we all play a part of that. And we've got a responsibility to create environments that are difficult, that are supportive, that are joyful, that are productive, and we should enjoy that responsibility and not let weeks roll past where we're just churning out the same practice plan with the same attitude. You know, it's that, you know, the old Einstein's definition of insanity, you know, doing the same thing over and over, expecting different results.
Yep.
I think one of the, like, listening to that is just to make it process in my head, because that was, I thought that was incredibly powerful. And I'll probably listen to that again at another point. But, like, to put it into an example, I liken it to when you're a baby or you have a baby and they've got tummy time. They hate it. They hate it. Like, I don't think I've seen, at least initially, there comes a lot of tears and tantrums, and because they don't want it. They want to be up with you. They want to sit on your lap. They want to cuddle you. They want to feel that you're near them, all of that. You all of a sudden put them on their tummy and they're out by themselves and they're expected to hold their own head up and they're expected to start gaining some strength. So what comes with it? Frustration, which in a baby is crying.
Crying, some adults. And
but then it's also the thought process of, all right, what does tummy time lead to? Crawling. What does crawling lead to? Walking. What does walking lead to? Running. What, you know, like it's this whole thing that you can't just jump to the run. You've got to start here, and we've got to let them, like, as a baby, you let them feel that. You let them go through it, as much as it sucks at times having to listen to it. But you let them do that. So we've almost got to take that same approach at times, I think, with, you know, our younger athletes or our you know, teenagers, of, hey, is this a tummy time moment?
Yeah, and there will be time. And look, we all know it, the growth of coaches, players and everyone else. Like, people are not the same human now they were a week and a half ago. Like, it changes and evolves so regularly. We've got to be okay with that. Like, it's sometimes they will not be the person you hope they will be, and that's fine too. Like, that's just not meant to be for them or for whatever case it might be. But, you know, it is sitting in that uncomfortable area where, hey, you're going to have to go through some stuff as a player in particular or as a coach where I'm not enjoying this. I'm on a four-game losing streak and I think I might be responsible for all four of the losses. Like, it's going to suck. But you got to try and find a way to just get out of that sort of headspace and try and, well, okay, what can I change? How can I change it? What can I do in that sort of space? So it is something to take a little bit of stock in, that everyone goes through it. It's, you know, everyone feels a loss. Everyone feels when it's not going well, but you might be winning, those sorts of things. It's, you know, winning is a great Band-Aid, but it is just that. It is a Band-Aid. So you've got to be a little bit careful with all of that sort of stuff, that, you know, is the environment a good environment? And when it is, in the case of the country, great. Like, you know, the medal's just the cherry on top in that sort of space. Hey, thanks for both of you for jumping in today as the podcast returns for another block. We'll be getting through some more content over the next couple of weeks.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Talking Split Podcast. Make sure you like and comment on your favorite podcast platform. And don't forget to share and subscribe so that you never miss an episode.